Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to Strange Familiars, true stories of the paranormal, cryptids, hauntings, the occult, mythology, UFOs, folklore, weird and forgotten history. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Strange Familiars on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you are listening. Please share the Strange Familiars page and episodes on Facebook and other social media. If you have experienced something strange, or if you know a story you would like us to cover, email strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, and of course, strangefamiliars.com.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Tonight I'm going to be talking with Tobe Johnson. He runs Strangebrow. You can find that at strangebrow.com. strangebrau.com. I'll put the link for that and some other links in the show notes, so check them out there. Tonight's kind of a meeting of the stranges, Strangebrow and Strange Familiars. I've talked with Tobe a little bit previous to this, and I knew we were kind of on the same page, but I have to say, the stories he tells are incredible, and they're at this intersection of UFOs and poltergeist and Bigfoot and fae activity. It's the crossroads where I currently live, I think. And he has a very open-minded approach and a very, I think, similar approach to mine. I think he's got some great stories. He's got some great activity going on. He's living currently at an area with repeated activity. We'll let him tell the stories. Make sure to check out the links. Make sure to check out what Tobe is doing with Strangebrow. And if you can attend his events with Ron Moorhead coming up, I would definitely recommend doing so. They look to be like something really special. I don't know. I figure we'll just go. I didn't write questions or anything down. I figure we can just kind of freeform it.
Oh, yeah.
And see where things lead us.
You know, yeah, I feel like this is a conversation a long time coming. It's generally pretty difficult to talk to someone about Sasquatch in general that don't immediately connect it to the paranormal. And, you know, I always did. It just seemed like, and first of all, it was in that category. You know, if you're looking for a book, that's where you would find it amongst everything else that was, you know, an unsolved mystery, along with tarot cards and mediums. And so it was just intrinsically put inside my brain that this was a paranormal, supernatural phenomena. But it's generally pretty difficult to have that conversation with people in this field because they take themselves so serious and they look at themselves as, you know, just data filled, you know, douchebags. And it's very difficult for me to have that conversation with most of these guys because they just go into themselves first and their reputations and all of their footprints and their hairs. And I get it. It's fun. It's like collecting baseball cards, but it's a relief to talk to you because I think that, you know, you understand that this is a layered subject and it has all this connective tissue of the paranormal that's kind of attached to the whole.
Oh, absolutely. And it's hard to talk about because I'm not out to specifically, you know, offend someone, you know, from that camp, but it is almost like they're very, very desperate to be accepted by, you know, mainstream science. And they're so afraid to talk about something that doesn't sound scientific that, you know, the mere mention of weird lights being associated with the phenomenon or tracks that walk into the middle of a field and disappear, they go nuts. It's like they won't have it. They just shut down and it's a no. In fact, I was contacted by someone somewhat local recently who said, I really need to talk to you. I'm a member of the BFRO, but I go out and every time I go out Bigfooting, I see these weird lights, or my daughter does. I forget exactly what the case was. And he said, they won't even let me talk about it.
Right. I mean, one of the funny things about that organization is that it's full of people that have these files that they call the flats. You have to be a privileged member, or a team leader of sorts to get permission to be on what they call the BFRO flats, which is basically a holding house of all these weird reports. There's a couple of people I know that were a part of that expedition scene and would take people out, 15, 20 people at a time, and then they would go on to the BFRO flats and look at these other reports, the ones like you're talking about. So a lot of people end up leaving these bigger organizations, but you know, they charge quite a bit of money to do this. When you're paying that kind of money, you expect to kind of, you know, be able to say exactly what you saw and maybe have some feedback about it, because you know, along with seeing the paranormal is a total world view change and shift. And unless you really prepare people for that the same way you do for it being bitter cold outside, or the same way you do about poison oak or rattlesnakes, there needs to be a conversation with especially these newbies that come face to face with these paradigm shifts. And there's absolutely not. You know, they pretend as though it didn't happen. So, I mean, we can get into that.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's disingenuous at best. I mean, you know, I've said it, I don't know how many times on the podcast, if you're going to tell me it's okay to look for an ape man, an 8 foot tall ape man in the woods, but I got to shut up if I see, you know, weird lights out there while I'm looking for them. Like what?
Yeah.
What world are we living in?
I know.
And I can't say they're 100% related. I can't tell you they're definitely related. But I think you have to say, like, look, I was out there looking for one weird thing that people say doesn't exist, and I saw another weird thing that people say doesn't exist. Can we not at least talk about that? You know, can we not at least mention these things?
Nobody's seen a Bigfoot make a stick structure or leave a glyph or make a wood knock even. There's no video recordings of them doing any of that stuff, but that counts as data for these apers. And it's, you know, utter nonsense when they discount the lights. I mean, let's just start there. That's really one of the first things that gave me a nice little massage on the back and said, okay, young man, this is how we'll start out. We'll start out soft and low with seeing these lights in Bigfoot areas. And you hear these stories like you're hearing these stories. I don't know. Have you had a chance, Tim, to see these lights?
I've seen lights. Now, I don't know, like the orb lights, the will-o'-wisp kind of drifting lights, I saw separate. Yeah. I saw those on the farm I grew up on. And I told this story to Wes from Sasquatch Chronicles. I was a little kid, and my mother was so matter-of-fact about it that I thought they were like something very, very natural. Because I remember we were kind of looking through. There was a little grove in the back area, and there was these lights down there. And my mother was very casual and said, "Oh, those are will-o'-the-wisps." And we had willow trees on the farm, and I thought they had something to do with the willow trees. Like, she was so matter of fact about it. I thought, you know, like these are some kind of firefly or something that was attracted to the willow trees or something. So I, you know, I have seen those. Okay. Did not in any way associate it with anything particularly weird, even for years. You know, much years later, I realized, like, oh no, these are, you know, something that's unusual. But at the time, I didn't register that I wasn't seeing anything, you know, that was the least bit odd. But the
when you use the word natural, it is very natural, but also extremely unnatural. But they do have like this really organic quality to them. They seem to be alive, and people are uncomfortable hearing that. But who cares? I mean, they have an organic living quality to them that seems like, hey, you know, we've been here a long time. We've been doing this a long time. And then you add this intelligence quality into them, which I don't know if I've necessarily experienced that part. I know that others talk about this other cognitive ability of them to follow you and whatnot, but I haven't seen that myself. But for your mother just to be so natural about them, that's kind of the way, you know, it probably should be. But we're told these things absolutely don't happen. And if they do, they need to be under these parameters of swamp gas and ball lightning. But when you see these things on a full moon, you know, on top of a hillside, and they just refuse to defy explanation. There's no swamp. There's no ball lightning. These are the conditions I've seen them in, and they're all Bigfoot areas. So this connective tissue of the life surrounding Bigfoot, you know, I've noticed that the lights come in before Bigfoot activity, the traditional activity comes in, i.e. the rock throwing or the sounds and whatnot. It's almost like a precursor, you know, the thunder roll before the lightning strike.
Now what I have seen are and bless him, this one guy I go with, he's very interested in Bigfoot, super, super good guy, super nice guy. And he told me the whole time, I think it's eyeshine. And I was not, we were staying in this one area, and I was like, Jeff, I don't think it's eyeshine. I think they're just weird lights. You know, I couldn't imagine that it was eyeshine. And it behaved very strange. They changed colors. I really think what we're talking about is eye glow, which is another just bizarre thing. Like, this is absolutely bizarre, because I don't think there was enough ambient light to reflect this brightly. They look like LED lights in the woods. And in fact, that's what I thought they were. I was like, what's out there? What is man-made that's out there? I went back during the day. There's nothing man-made out there. It was nothing. But they would change colors. And again, at this point, I got lectured about this. Again, I talked about it on Sasquatch Chronicles. I got a nasty gram. Someone yelled at me for shining lasers in the poor Bigfoot's eyes. I didn't know. I didn't think at this point.
Bigfoot. Right.
It was just a weird light in the woods to me. I wouldn't do it now. Yeah. Whether it's eye glow or not, I wouldn't do it, because I feel like we're poking at the phenomenon. I don't think it's probably a good idea to poke at it. But at the time, just as a matter of experiment, my friend had this laser. I said, hey, point the laser at it, see what happens. And every time he'd hit it with the laser, they would turn red. They were naturally sort of whitish blue, and he'd hit them with that, and they would turn red and go out. And it was just bizarre. It was, you know, and he started hitting them, and they're changing colors, and you know, every time he hit them with the laser, they turn red and go out. I don't know of a man-made light that reacts like that. You'd have to show me one. I don't think there is one.
Yeah. Wow. Now, did the eyes wince or blink or turn away from the harsh laser coming at it, or what did it, how did it respond?
It looked like it would turn red and aperture out, you know, like a camera almost, like it would kind of aperture down to nothing. And again, at this point, I'm still not thinking eyeshine. I'm still thinking, wow, those are weird lights. Those are some really weird lights out there. Mm-hmm. I called Jeff, told him I was seeing them, because he had told me about them several times, and I wasn't looking in the right place is what it was. I finally found what he was talking about, And he runs up with binoculars. And sure enough, when you look at him through binoculars, my other thing that I thought they weren't eye shine was I was only seeing one light, never two together, it seemed like. But when you looked at him through binoculars, you could see they were two eyes. They were two separate lights. So that's the other thing I thought, well, that's interesting. Now, these lights also change shape. We saw them change into bars, and looks like, I didn't see this, but the one guy that was with me said they turned into what looked like a circle of LEDs, and then they would go back to the two or the one light. Very, very strange behavior. Didn't think in any way this could be eye glow or eye shine or anything until I heard someone from Texas on Sasquatch Chronicles describe exactly what I saw, exactly those lights, the changing colors. He didn't mention the laser, but I don't think he had a laser. The only difference was he saw it within the silhouette of a creature. He saw him change.
Right.
So that's when I finally went, wow, I think my buddy Jeff's right. I think there was enough other stuff going on there from weird vocals we recorded to knocks and what sounded like monkey chatter and some other stuff. And we had some weird sightings or possible sightings there as well. So putting it all together with that, I sort of kind of finally said, well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe their eyes shine, and I'll still leave that 10%. Maybe it's not, but you know, at this point I'm kind of like 90%.
Right.
It's eye shine or eye.
I know. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. It's fun when you have someone along with you, so you don't feel, you know, so nuts, but it's a constant with most Bigfooters. They just refuse to talk about it in public. That's why back in February, I decided to put something together again. Before, we did something up the river called Bigfoot and Beer, and it was up a little tiny pizza restaurant up the McKenzie Valley in the Cascade Mountains. And different years, and we get locals together and have pizza and beer and have guest speakers in, and it turned into the whole town hall phenomena. So after the pizza restaurant closed down, it was about 5 or 6 years later, and I decided to do something to coax these kind of witnesses back out from the fold again, including the people that hold back on the stories like you're telling about eyeshine, a lot of, you know, good researchers and whatnot. And the best way I found to do that is to get a drink in their hand. And so we started something called Strange Brow, which is unabashedly a paranormal, supernatural conference that we do every last Sunday of the month from 2 to 6 p.m. at a little place called The Axe and Fiddle in Cottage Grove, Oregon. You got the t-shirt and kind of know a little bit about it. But the idea was to put a format together, you know, a live broadcast to get these witnesses to talk about the stranger things, not just with Bigfoot, but like we had, you know, Christopher Garitano come on and talk about the Montauk Chronicles, and a gal named Lindsay Brisbane, who had a crazy paranormal encounter that mimicked a lot of the scenery out of the movie The Ring. And so, you know, if you can have those larger conversations, it makes the Bigfooter maybe a little more at home to talk about the stranger aspects of what's happening. I mean, the lights and the eye shine being the smallest of those things here.
Right.
You know, they really are just kind of like the baby steps into how crazy this bottomless rabbit hole goes. I mean, you know, even John Green, you know, would say that there's way more questions than there are answers with this phenomena. And like Wes Germer says, I mean, this is an issue that surrounds the globe and refuse to give up what really is the nature of all this here. And the idea that the forest is reclaiming the body is just, it's just a dumb argument, because here we have classical sightings every day around the globe. And these creatures must number in the thousands. I mean, at least they number in the thousands, and they're coming right in the neighborhood. So the idea that the forest is reclaiming only this species' body and leaving all the other bodies available is just ridiculous. We have much more rare. I mean, the Tasmanian tiger is supposedly extinct, and we have better footage now of Tasmanian tigers roaming around in Tasmania than we do of Bigfoot. So
right.
It's a matter of time before we find that baby again.
You know, I always say, how many game cams do we have placed in the United States now? They're everywhere, thousands and thousands of game cams. And they are finding rare creatures. There was a bird they thought was extinct that they found in Louisiana. And the reason they found it is because it turned up on somebody's game cam. You know, this thing was incredibly rare. And then they were able to, you know, track it down.
Right.
You know, it's you're right. The forest reclaiming the body, it's, you know, everybody ever, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no match in the fossil record. There's, you know, some people, Gigantopithecus. But really, I mean, you know, first of all, we only have a jawbone, right, for Gigantopithecus. We don't know if it was bipedal for sure. There's so much we don't know that to claim like, oh yes, it's just a, you know, an ancestor of Gigantopithecus. This just seems, it's like such a stretch. But
the dialogue from that is shifted. You know, they don't use that word gigano hardly as much as they did 6 years ago. So now that everything's a relic. Mm-hmm. And it's closer to us, you know, than it is gigano. So a relic hominid, and that's the new coin term that Jeff Melder put out there. And all of the little wannabes are using that term now. And but it's so much more than that. It's so much more beautiful. And, you know, over the last 45 days, I've had a chance to experience some of that beauty in a surprising turn of events, is to actually move into an area that has so much Bigfoot activity that you can't actually work on the statue of Bigfoot in the garage, which has been my predicament here. Here I am looking at this 7.5 foot tall replica of a Sasquatch that I made for Ron Moorhead's party we're having for him in September. And I'm having a hard time getting to it because right outside the door is this very elaborate game that wants to be played by these family groups of Sasquatch.
Now, all right.
I've never seen a Sasquatch. I haven't seen one here yet, but it is so predominant. It's really the only thing you can focus on when you're at this property is what the next game is going to be.
I have to hear about this. I don't know whether we should start on that and go backwards or start with your earlier accounts and go up to that.
Okay. I'm
completely fascinated by this, though. So let's talk about this. What's this game? What's going on?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of areas we could go into first, but let's just go to Easter Friday. I guess it would have been Good Friday before Easter. It was a full moon. And came up on, it was the guy I lived with, his name's Daryl Adams, and his wife's name's Cindy Adams. And Daryl's really into the subject matter, and that's how we met. We were down the way from the London tracks, which we cast back in 2012 out here in Cottage Grove, and he bought a house right off of London Road. And so I said, great, your backyard has got great sightings. Let's go out and beat the streets and see what we can find. So he says, well, I drew an elk tag the last day. It's Good Friday. Let's go see if we can do two things at once. And I said, great. So I got in the passenger seat and he grabbed his rifle and we headed up the hills and we're looking for elk signs for a good part of 3 or 4 hours and also looking for stick structures and you name it. It's a beautiful day. And so I find out the passenger window a set of what looked like deep appendage impressions. You know, they almost look like someone took a basketball and bounced them in the clay mud. And there were these, you know, nice rounded out divots next to these elk tracks. So I told Daryl to back up the truck and I immediately turned on my camera and started filming because they were just curious looking. It turns out when you leaned in on these impressions, there was two of them. There was a left and a right, and they were relatively close to the gravel bank and separated about 18 inches apart. And I'm looking at them right now in the garage as I'm talking to you. They had hair sticking out of them, little black hairs, very human looking. And they're coming out of what looked like bone structure. And they look like kneecaps that had plunged inside the red clay. And I just looked at Daryl and I said, what if? I said, even if these are elk or bear or cow, whatever. I said, you know, we got a cat. And so we spent the better part of 5 or 6 hours making sure we meticulously recorded everything, extruded the hair aseptically, sent the hair up to Canada to a gal named Cindy Dosen who runs the Hominid Enigma program. So we have these plaster knees that show anatomy. They show patella, bone structure, skin folds, and they still have hairs sticking out of the kneecaps. The right one in particular is very impressive. You can see a lot with a black light. Hairs came back. I said, Cindy, before you tell me what the hairs are, this will be my Geraldo moment. Either the bank vault's going to be empty or not. I'll put you on the big screen for Strange Brown. You can tell the whole audience. And, you know, I'll bring the kneecaps in and we can just say, ah, shuck. You know, that's what I was expecting. And it didn't come out that way. And there we are with these kneecaps and Ron Moorhead sitting in the audience and this anxious crowd that really doesn't know what I'm up to. And I said, you know, sent these hairs off, probably going to come back as an elk or a cow. But they didn't. She had a real detailed reason why. And she said, it's an unknown hominid. You know, they belong in a category amongst themselves. They're human-like hairs, but not human. And they're not an ungulate. But the real telling thing was is that she said that she said, the only matching hair I had was from a juvenile Sasquatch report from Ocean Shores, Washington. They matched that hair due to the lack of a medulla. And then she says, but it also shows that it's part of a lower extremity. And that was really telling to me because that's what we were guessing. You know, this came off of a lower half, in particular a knee. So we have all these hairs, right? And she, you know, she's on our team as far as saying, okay, it looks like you guys have a plaster cast of Bigfoot knees. Well, then we had to see how big this creature possibly could. And we came back with a Boeing engineer out of Washington State, Scott Taylor. And he took my knee impressions, which I did next to this, you know, these unknown knees in the exact same area on the exact same kind of day. And we cast my knee to see if we could do a surface area measurement of how roughly how large and weight this creature would have been to do this in the substrate. And we did a running jump and then we did a resting jump to kind of take a medium measure of everything. Anyway, came back at around 12 to 1400 pounds, oof, which, you know, those numbers are gigantic. Yeah. So it's not an ungulate. It's not a known creature. It's, you know, it comes back as a very large human. So we brought these knees home and they're sitting in this garage. And having this conversation with the property owner about keeping an eye on those knees now that we're public about it and posting stuff and talking about it, there could be anxious people maybe wanting to take a look at those knees. Not that it's that great of evidence, but I've heard weirder stories about, you know, people tapping on your phone or, you know, checking out what's really going on with the evidence, as it were. And having Cindy Dosen on our side was a plus because her mail gets taken all the time when hair samples come up her way. They just won't arrive. So they just end up in this mysterious area in customs. So I said, you know, maybe put a game cam in the garage. Well, that night he didn't put a game cam in his garage, but I get a phone call from the property owner. The doors of the garage have been, there's a brand new, beautiful 18, 20 foot tall two-door garage that he had built here. Anyway, the garage doors opened up on their own. And so he comes out in the morning, and to surprise, there's some footprints. Now, they're shoe prints, though, and they're walking over to the kneecaps, and sitting on the kneecap is sitting this little tiny toothbrush. So that toothbrush is kind of indicative to me that someone was trying to mess with my head, because I always put that little excavation device away in its proper drawer when I'm scraping away the mud to look at anatomy on this kneecap. So it was sitting right on the right kneecap, and here's some muddy sneaker prints walking up to it. And then they moved a couple other things around, and then they undid the deadbolt and just walked out the door.
Wow.
And just followed these sneaker prints. So like, okay, well, that's certainly odd. It matches maybe some predictability about behavior of whatever could happen if you get too close to the, you know, the hive. Then our phones start acting up, and that lasted for about 48 hours. Anytime we talked, our phone would do a very strange high-pitched buzz, and then it would shut it down. So we just kind of ignored the story for a period of about 3 or 4 weeks. Well, one day, the garage doors went flying back up again in the morning. Daryl walks out here and sees the garage door open and sitting between these plaster hands I'm making for the Sasquatch structure is a little blue dinosaur. And it's a little tiny dollar store Velociraptor, baby blue, and it's just sitting there on top of the desk where I'm molding these hands out. And I couldn't believe it, you know, because it's just like, well, who would walk in here and put a little blue dinosaur? You know, no footprints this time, no real clue on how long they'd actually been there. I assume only a couple of days. But so then I moved into this property and I moved in full time to build this statue. And I also work 45 hours a week. So I was rushing back and forth. And when I moved into this property, things just really started to amp up as far as I will call it gifting. And immediately when I put my camper up and threw down the awning, little things would start to appear on the awning. Now, they weren't just, you know, sticks and stones. One of the first things that appeared was just a pebble, you know, a little tiny rock. And it was just sitting there. It certainly didn't belong on the canopy, but we kind of played it off because, you know, maybe a leaf blower did it. Maybe it fell out of a tree. I don't know. It's a pretty high canopy, but, you know, you have a tendency to want to play this stuff off. And then we took my son fishing one day. Daryl and I took the boat out. And we, right before we left, we look on top of the canopy. There was this piece of wood sitting on top of the canopy at first. This is the same day. It was a little chunk of wood, and it looked like a piece of Palo Santo incense, which is like a, you know, Omar type of incense. It's very fragrant, and you can burn it, use it for protection. A lot of people use it in ghost hunting and whatnot. And it's, you know, just a very fragrant piece of, almost feels like basswood or balsa wood. So there's this chunk of little tiny, maybe 2-inch long piece of wood sitting up there. So we knock that down and take a look at it. And we go out fishing and we're talking about that piece of wood and what's going on. And I kind of, you know, putting things together in my own head. And my son, who's been immersed in this, definitely knows where my mind's heading. And so I'm trying to break it to the property owner, maybe what's going on. That there's a game that's starting here. we get back home and we've been only been gone about 2 hours, beautiful sunny day. And here's where things start to really amp up as far as what I think they want to get across to us at first, that they can read our mind. And I've heard time and time again, you know, from long-term witnesses that they want you to know that you can't trick them. So they let you know how outplayed you are by telling you, hey, we can read your mind. So the way they did that was as they put a carnelian, which is a beautiful fiery orange agate about the size of a half dollar on top of the canopy. And we're pulling the boat in. We see this thing sitting on the canopy. And as soon as we see that it's a carnelian stone, I'm like, Daryl, that's the one stone that you told me was worth money. I mean, you mentioned that in the garage, right? And he goes, yeah. I said, that's really interesting. Don't you think that out of all the rocks sitting on top of this canopy, you know, 6.5 feet up off the ground, they put that one? And he goes, yeah, that is interesting. So let's fast forward to examples of this, of them reading your mind. There was the moment where we were, I don't want to skip around too much because I'll now screw it up, but oh. Well, the gal, Daryl's wife, had open heart surgery. That was about a year and a half ago. So she walks out to her hummingbird feeders, and there's a little glass heart sitting underneath the hummingbird feeder. Now she grabs this glass heart, and she holds it in her hand. It has dropped it. But, you know, it's perfectly placed underneath the tree, right underneath the hummingbird feeder. So she sets it back down, and the thing ends up on a branch like a couple hours later. So, you know, eye level with her, like, hey, you had the heart surgery. That's how I took it.
Yeah.
I'm a really intricate hand glyph that looks like, you know, five fingers and a palm out of a little stick. And it's kind of my thing that I leave out for Bigfoot. I found a very detailed example of that sitting by the same tree where this heart was. Only thing was, is it was set down within a matter of like 30 minutes of me turning my back on it. So this daytime gifting program of them reading your mind is just like over the top, like poltergeist over the top.
Right.
I mean, you have to layer in poltergeist and yep. ghost stuff with this. If you're going to bring in the UFOs and everything else, I mean, this veil, this open door policy of the paranormal coming in and out just based upon where this house sits. Who knows what this house is sitting on, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 1,000%. In fact, it was, you know, Josh Cutchin, I was on another podcast and I was talking about this sort of gifting exchange. It had more to do with rock stacking and stuff I was doing that was playing out. I don't want to go over it too much because I've talked about it several times in the podcast, but I found some white quartz that looked like someone was just bashing it on a boulder. It was like splintered everywhere while I was hiking. I made a little cairn. I came back a few days later, someone had changed it. And this started a thing where I'd go and I'd change it. And every time I come back, it'd be changed. And this went on for months and months and months.
Right.
Eventually I was walking up to it. It was in January of 2017. I heard what I thought was like a rock clack behind me. Some crows went off right over top of me and like really sounding off, and like a whole murder of crows just went right over my head, sounding off very low. And they were pretty used to me. These crows, I knew where they kind of would roost in these trees, and I didn't scare them. I was there often enough where, you know, they would sound off. They would let the other crows know I was there, but they wouldn't like come out of the trees and, you know, really be frightened or anything. Went up to this area where I was doing this cairn thing, and before I could even change the rock stack, it had been changed when I got there. Was overcome with this powerful fear, just incredible fear. Got the skunky dead animal smell, and you know, knowing the Bigfoot accounts as I do, I thought like, well, here comes a sighting. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
and was in no way prepared for it. I was terrified, to be honest. It didn't happen. I heard this sound. It sounded like metal gears clicking. Three like click click click, like small metal gears, not like giant metal gears. But and everything, like the fear went away, the smell went away, everything all at once. And on the way out, yeah. I found what looked like maybe footprints in the snow. There was a very like light covering of snow on the ground. And you know, nothing that I'm not going to convince, you know, another Bigfoot person, much less a skeptic with these, but I didn't notice them on the way in. They crossed.
Well, the clicking sound, if anything, you mentioned that mechanical clicking sound that doesn't seem like it would be a natural sound from, you know, a giant mammal. Those are the kind of sounds I'm most interested in, because I think those, you know, link travel somehow, movement. And appearing and disappearing.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
We just downloaded another group of parabolic sounds from the backfield here. This sounds like a giant stone crypt sliding. And if you can just imagine like Bela Lugosi awakening from his tomb and the sound of granite sliding on hollow granite, it's really fascinating when that sound is accompanied by jet thrusters. Right. And not just airplane flying overhead, but like there is like this serious eight minute long jet thruster sound on top of these stone crypts. Even radio frequency sounds of voices coming through, like you would expect out of an EVP session where they scan through the, you know, the AM broadband.
Right. Yeah.
We get those sounds now coming out of this hollow earth, and it's right in the backyard somewhere. I mean, it's up in the hillside, which does not belong, but maybe it does belong.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, when you talk about the gifting happening in a matter of minutes, the way I first knew that, like, I was under the assumption that another person was visiting the park as often as I was and was completely like still interested in doing it. I'm still interested in playing this game. And, you know, of course I've read that people have done this with Bigfoot before, but at this point I'm still like, it's probably a person, but I'm very interested in playing this game. My wife was calling it my chessboard. We went there with my family one day, my wife and kids. And they were hiking in a different area. I said, hey, I'm going to run up and check my chessboard. Went up, checked it, rearranged things, and walked back down and met her in this, you know, we were going to meet at this other place, this other trail. I met her at that trail. She says, oh, I want to go up and see it. It's about a 15-minute hike maybe, so round trip hike. So, you know, I've been gone maybe 20 minutes from this area when I came back. And there's a leaf underneath one of the rocks I put. Now, that was the only change that was made, but I didn't put a leaf underneath the rock. You know what I mean? Like I reckon as soon as I went up, I said, I didn't put
That's significant.
And leaves don't fall under rocks. You know, it just doesn't happen. And that's when I knew either something, you know, something weird's going on. Either this had to be a person that was like hiding behind the tree as I did this, or, you know, something weird is going on here. And since then, have you read Mike Clellan's book? It's called The Messengers.
Oh yeah.
Have you read that book?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. The owls and stuff. In that book, there's a chapter about a woman who can basically. She says she can basically summon owls. Like if she says like I want to see an owl today, she'll go out on a hike. She'll see an owl. Very interesting. I thought, and this was going to the same place. I thought, well, I don't want to necessarily see an owl. I'm going to say, like, I want to, I have since I was a kid, skulls that I find in the woods and antlers and stuff. So I would like to find antlers today. I think that would be neat. So I put that out there. I'm walking up to this area and I see something white in the tree, like blowing in the wind. I thought it was a plastic bag. I clean up as I go, you know, I feel it's my obligation.
Sure.
So I you know, I'm very angry at whatever human has left this plastic bag that is, you know, in this tree or blown in this tree. It's the entire tail feather section of a barn owl, just bright white, like the entire tail section.
Wow.
In the tree. And I was like, what the heck? Like, you know, went on to have this whole series of owl synchronicities, which kind of ended in me starting to find skulls whenever I go on Bigfoot investigations. Almost 100% of the time. It's bizarre. So now, like, so I asked for the antlers. I didn't get the antlers. I went on another area. I picked up a perfectly clean raccoon skull. It was in the middle of the trail. Like, isn't this cool? Put it in my pack. Came back 3 weeks later, had a maybe sighting, followed something for about three quarters of a mile. And there was a deer skull impaled at eye level in the middle of the path that wasn't there 3 weeks before. Just like it was waiting for me. And, you know, I had somebody say, oh, did you take it as a warning? I did not. I, for some reason I got the feeling like it was like, oh, you like that raccoon skull. Well, here's a deer skull, you know? And, again, it was perfectly clean, perfectly, you know,
I hardly ever find skulls when I'm out. You're lucky.
Oh, I get it.
Or maybe not lucky. It sounds like you've got a better gifting program.
it's bizarre. So I got called. I met a witness out in Michaux Forest, and all day long I kept finding deer skull. He was driving me around. He was driving to the areas where his encounters were, and every place we stopped, he had a pickup, thankfully. I was like, do you care if I put these skulls in your truck? He's like, no. Every single place we stopped, I found the skull. And then I got a call recently. A guy said, you know, I saw Bigfoot on my property. He was right here in York County with me. I said, I'll be there tomorrow. Went there. he saw him across his property. I went across the property. I was, you know, doing the thing. I hold my walking stick up. Tell me how high it was, you know, all that. Tell me where he was standing. Tell me where to stop. He tells me where to stop.
Right.
I look down right where he said the creature was standing. There's a deer skull sitting right there. It is unbelievable. When you say it's like reading your mind or it's like playing with you somehow, I mean, to find it on, it, even if it was 20% of the investigations I went out on, okay, but I'm talking like 60, 70, 80% of these investigations, I'm finding deer skulls prominently placed. I'm not digging around under leaves or anything.
Yeah.
It's just nutty. I mean,
I'm hearing skulls when I'm out, so it sounds like there's something. If you're finding them that often, it sounds like those are the kind of gifts that you want, so they're bringing them.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And like I said, I've collected them since I was a kid. It's just always something, you know, I drew them and stuff. And so, but my collection in the past year, maybe 2 years, has at least tripled. I've gotten so many that I'm starting to put them outside now. Because there's no room for them. It's completely wacky.
Are you sure your last name's not Dahmer and not Rick?
No, I'm not interested in gore. Like, that's the other thing. If there's any gore on them, I won't pick them up. I don't like rotten meat. I don't like that gory, bloody stuff. They have to be perfectly clean and sun bleached for me to even touch them. And that's what these are. They're just, you know, so they're not you know, new kills or anything. So, but anyway,
that's, I know that the. One of the first kills I saw was on a property where I saw the lights explode in the woods. That's kind of a long story, but it was an area where my tent was stuck up in a tree. It was moved like 40 feet away from where I put the tent in the beginning. The tent was stuck up about 8 feet up in a tree. Wow. We saw these amazing lights explode in the tree line. But I was following up on these stick structures down on the property where the single trackway disappeared in the snow, and walking up there during the daylight hours, beautiful summer day. And I'd walked in on an old skid road and fairly open. So I sat there and hung some wind chimes and put some popcorn down, and I turned my back. And there was this mole that had been separated. It was oozing blood. It was so fresh and had been pinched in half. Wow. Not a critter on it, no bugs, nothing. And there it was at my feet. We've seen that at the property here now. There was a rabbit that was killed. It was killed. I asked for a rabbit. It was laid in front of the trailer. It had a rock sticking out of its skull. It was incredibly fresh. And then a couple days later, about 3 days later, we had a snake. After they left the rabbit, I said, thank God they're not leaving snakes. So when I walked back to the exact same spot 3 days later, laying exactly where this rabbit was, laid out was this red gardener snake with its head popped off. And it was a bug who hadn't even touched it yet. And I hate snakes. I mean, it's just like the one thing that, you know, if you want me to leave here, put another snake, you know, down. Because I can't do it. You know, no matter what the gift is, please just don't leave me a snake. I actually ended up trying to conquer that fear and putting that snake in like little Altoids tin, because the meat bees are really, they're almost like maggots. I mean, they clean off every ounce of flesh off that snake, so there's nothing left but a spinal column. So I took the gift and I put it in a little Altoids tin and duct taped it really tight. So I have all these crazy gifts. In fact, let me see if I can grab my little grab bag. I'll go through the visual aid here for your audience so they can get an idea of what they're leaving here. And these are all certified weird gifts. So what I mean by that is they're either put up like 8 feet high on top of a log, they're puzzles that I've left out for them, or they're put on top of my tent trailer canopy or in front of my door. So we have a 7-foot-long honed walking stick. Looked like it was stolen off of somebody's patio and stuck in front of my trailer. A green plastic disc that looked like they belonged to a construction crew. A little blue action figure with its head kind of chewed on. Looks like a lawnmower hit this guy. A piece of red pipe. A little metal flange. item that was set on top of my rearview mirror balancing itself while I was swimming down the road. I came back, and sitting on top of my rearview mirror was a balancing pine cone. I have a piece of gravel that I found sitting on top of my bedspread inside my trailer. So that would be the second object that has appeared inside the dinosaur that I mentioned earlier. Would have been the first. A little bronze necklace. I'm sorry, a little bronze bracelet that was thrown on top of my canopy. And it just goes on and on. A fishing bobber sitting out after we went fishing. We found a little bobber sitting in front of my door. It was acknowledging what we were doing. We have handprints all over this place, examples of how tall they are because they're squeezing the rain gutters up to around 12 feet and pinching them, pulling away from the shed. Greasy handprints on the back of truck beds, the size of, we did a measurement compared to these fingers here, and it's laughable. And then greasy handprints, white greasy handprints, the size of a child, inside one of the bedrooms, as though, if you imagine maybe like a five-year-old child trying to push his way out of a door with chalk on his hand. So all these to keep track of and put in order and maybe someday do something with. But right now we're just kind of racing this paranormal race.
That's amazing. So the handprints were inside. They were inside the room, in other words. They weren't like on the window.
Yeah, the greasy white ones. Well, the chalky white ones are inside. They're still there. They're sitting inside the bedroom. It's a bedroom where we just found out a family left this house rather quickly. The asking price was under, I think it was 50 grand, under what it would have been sold for. So when the property owners bought this, they got a real good deal on it. And they moved up here from California area, Oregon, and bought this house. And so before that, the house was demolished. There was an old farmhouse sitting here back in the 1940s. But the family that lived here before, the young man that used to live in this restroom where these chalky white handprints were found was raised in this house. Him and his sister and his mother and father all lived here together. So unfortunately, that boy just committed suicide like, I don't know, a month ago. And it was about that month ago that we found those handprints. In fact, we even got an EVP, it sounds like, out of that that bedroom. Before we knew any of this, we put the parabolics in this bedroom and shot out the side window to see if we could catch audio. But then we get this EVP of someone, it sounds like, saying, I'm dead. And then these handprints appear kind of on the day that his funeral was. So that gets into like, okay, you know, this open door policy of the paranormal. We have moon boots that I know how that sounds, man, but we have legitimate, like, I've seen these before. Other Bigfooters have seen this as well, but imagine like the size 9 or 8 Neil Armstrong type moon boot walking towards your trailer, just single track. We've caught it a couple different times. You know, they're right in the dusty part of the gravel. So that I've seen before up in the mix, a real smaller size of version of that. And it only sank down maybe like 6 inches in the snow coming from a remote snowbank. It made no sense for, you know, a small child to be hiking solo like that. So there's another long-term witness down the road. They see these prints coming up from the riverbank, yes, towards the back of their car, and then just disappear as though this young, small person, I shouldn't say young, but small entity, walks up to the back of the car and just vanishes. So, you know, it all gets into Skinwalker Ranch and what happened out there. And very similar, really.
Yeah, and that's one I always tell people to read up on. I mean, there's tons of information on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best examples.
We had a chance to go all the way. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead. I was just going to say it's one of the best examples of a
I was just going to say that we
paranormal phenomenon.
Yeah, we had a chance. I hopped in my Jeep the other month when they did the McMinnville UFO Festival, and George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell were the speakers. And, you know, Jeremy's putting out this documentary this year about Skinwalker Ranch, and they're going to do a 2.5 hour long presentation on the subject matter. So I grabbed a Bigfoot hair, headed to the UFO Festival to try to harangle George Knapp and give him one of these hairs. And I wrote up a little dossier, and you know, just like, you know, this would be the ultimate person to give a Bigfoot hair to. And so I'm waiting, you know, period of 24 hours of my presentation. I'm asleep in my car. So I'm walking around this festival, and all of a sudden this gal out of nowhere says, "Hey, you." I mean, there's thousands of people at this UFO festival. I think it's one of the biggest in the country. So this gal sitting at the outdoor restaurant there with her friend yells, "Hey, you got a story to tell." And I was like, "What?" And she flagged me over. So I came over there and introduced myself. And I said, "What do you mean I got a story to tell?" She goes, "Well, I seen you walking around here. What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, if you want to know the truth, I've got, I think it's some Sasquatch hair in my backpack, and I'm trying to get in touch with George Knapp and give him this report." And she goes, "I'm Sarah Lemos. I'm a psychic medium, and I'd love to hear your story." And so I sat down with her. I handed her this envelope with a hair in it. And she goes, "Well, let me tell you, before I hold the envelope, I'll take a reading off of it. And I just want you to know I'm a skeptic when it comes to Bigfoot stuff. I think it's only, you know, machismo men that are out with this monster fantasy of theirs. But I'll take a reading." So she grabbed this envelope, which had like two hairs in it, and one was like hung up in the plaster. So it was a really cool piece. But for all she knew, it could have had nothing in it. So she grabs this hair, and her eyes roll back on her head. And she turns to her friend and she says, "Oh my effing God, they're real." And she went on to have this profound experience. She was utterly floored by the experience of holding on to this envelope, and went on in great detail about the mystery that was attached to them. One thing that she was really confused by was their hierarchy as far as like how they place inside the realm of the Fae. And I said, "Well, you mean that they belong to like the wood spirits or the elementals or the?" And she goes, "No, it's much different than that. You know, these are holy beings. These are very holy animals." And I said, "Well," and she goes, I'm Buddhist. And these things," she goes, "I'm uncomfortable saying this, but they rival the Dalai Lama as far as like their holiness. And that's a really odd thing for me to have to say, but they're very profound creatures." And she said, "Oh, by the way, that it belongs to a female." And she was very afraid when she left those impressions in the dirt. So she was kind of like naming off where the location was to me, the fact that it was found in dirt. She would do that periodically, just, you know, throw me these little golden nuggets that she was legit. But when she said it was a female and she was scared, I thought that was a pretty interesting thing, because I've had other people attach these knees to a female Sasquatch with their ability to see things like that. But I'm not, I'm the kind of guy, maybe you're that kind of guy, that I have to have it right in my face to really, you know, be hit over the head with evidence.
Yes and no. I mean, I've been hit with so much weirdness that I guess it depends on your definition of evidence. You know what I mean? I had a fellow recently, for instance,
right,
play me recordings of him asking questions to the woods. And he said he couldn't hear it. He had like a recorder, like he would take to record EVPs. And he'd play it back, and it sure sounds like it's answering. And it sounds like it's answering the questions he's asking it. You know, so is that evidence? You know, I mean, I think most scientists would say it's, you know, it's a bunch of noise that you're making sound like what you want to be an answer. But it, in the face of all this other weirdness we're talking about, I'm now like sort of, I don't want to say yeah, taking it at face value, but I'm sort of accepting it, you know, for what it seems to be. I'll put it that.
Well, you know, I'm just more dense. It really wasn't that snake and that rabbit. I mean, even the rabbit, I was still like with the rocking out of his head. I know it sounds ridiculous. Here I was asking for it, and here it was looking at me. But when you know that something's reading your mind, it's a very daunting, shifting thing. I didn't handle that moment too well. You know, I think I paid a price for it because they left me that darn old nasty snake. But that really, the snake for me was just, and that wasn't too long ago. That was less than a week ago.
Wow.
That really was what's happened as far as Bigfoot is concerned, but maybe not as much as the paranormal is concerned. There was a moment here where we caught this on video. Here I am, a truck driver up north in Seattle, and I get a phone call from the property owner, Daryl. He goes, "Hey, I'm looking at this white agate sitting on top of the 7-foot-tall upright log." And I said, "Take a picture." And so he sent me this photograph of this little bulbous white agate. And it's maybe, you know, the size of about 1.5 inches. And it's just, you know, just sitting there for you to see. And he goes, "I got a haircut. I'll take a closer up picture when I get back." So he goes and gets a haircut, and I call my son, and we're having this conversation. And I haven't mentioned the rock yet to him because we're kind of still wondering what it looks like. And, you know, he goes, "You know, I wonder if Bigfoot will ever bring me anything." And I said, "I don't know." He goes, "Maybe they brought me, I was sitting on my dashboard of my car." And I said, "Well, that would be really weird if they brought you 40 miles away and put it on the dashboard of your mom's car." I said, "That would be awesome. I've heard of that before. And, you know, if I get blue dinosaurs stuck inside the garage here, maybe, baby." So then I hang up and I'm traveling back, and I get this phone call from the property owner that the rock is gone. And he goes, I mean, he could tell it really bothered him. Like, you know, how did that rock come off that log, that flat surface of that, you know, 90 degree plane? That shouldn't have happened. It's not sitting anywhere on the deck. And ding, ding, ding. Who did I just talk to? I talked to my son, Jude. I said, "I got to go." So I was just ready to play this game full on. I called Jude. I'm like, "Jude, grab your camera, put it on FaceTime. Don't ask me any questions. You're going to be okay. If this is what I think it is, it's going to be really cool." And I really didn't think anything was happening. Kind of just like when Cindy dosed on me about this hair in front of the audience, I really thought it was going to come back as innocuous. And so I have this video of my son walking painlessly through the living room of this house he just moved in. And I said, "Jude, what you're looking for is a orange rock." Now, I told him, I kind of fibbed to him because I wanted it to be a true test study of what, you know, if this was really going to unfold, I wanted him to not hold me. I said, "I want you to look for an orange rock on camera." And so here he is looking around on the floor of the living room, and he walks into the bathroom, and at the threshold of the bathroom is this little white rock.
Whoa.
And it's sitting right dead center on the threshold. And it's the same rock. I mean, you can see it in the picture.
Oh my
God. So that rock had apported, I guess is the technical term, from 45 miles away in a matter of like 1/2 hour or so on its own into a locked house with my son. Now that rock, it disappears periodically. It's locked inside a little metal tin can. And we have this game with people where we go shake the can. And sometimes the can's empty. And you'll shake the can and sometimes the rock's back. So we have examples of these apported objects. Now that was the most profound one for him. I mean, aside from seeing a Bigfoot. What's that?
I said it's Schrodinger's rock, you know, it's there sometimes, it's there not there others.
Yeah. That was a really cool moment with me and him, because to actually kind of unfold it, you know, live action style was really cool. We haven't had any more examples of that, but people that have had conversations with us have suddenly started things show up at their place, like buttons sitting on top of my girlfriend's bird feeder, or pillows that suddenly disappear and are stuffed weird corners upstairs where they shouldn't be. People, now this one I don't know what to make of it. Someone's claiming that the little blue dinosaur actually belongs to their daughter, only they live in Colorado. and that dinosaur has been missing for a matter of months. And they're so long-term witnesses. So what if, you know, what if this is like a greeting program of people that are experiencing the paranormal by giving them little objects? Kind of gets into, you know, Close Encounters and Richard Dreyfuss, when he meets that other woman, they have these shared experiences and they must meet at a certain time. They're, you know, even us talking, you know, it gets into that, like, you know, who are these people? And I think Sasquatch enjoys a whole different experience of time. They seem to enjoy it on a circular level, much like the Native Americans do and Tibetans, where they're not linear, they're experiencing everything all at once, and they can so outstep our clumsy version of time by, you know, predicting things.
Yeah, I'm blown away by the stone story. You know what I'm reminded of? And these stories are popping up more lately. Like, I wonder how long this has been happening that people have not talked about it. But now people are starting to talk about it. I'm sure you've heard these stories where people will do wood knocks, for instance, and they'll drive 50 miles home and then get a reply in the same pattern, you know, when they get out of their car. I'm sure you've heard stories like that, but that's what that reminds me of, that sort of, you know, the phenomenon traveling with you. And it happens again across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You hear people, you know, ghost hunters always talk about like bringing stuff home with them. Now Bigfoot people are starting to talk about, you know, people living neighborhoods are getting wall slaps. You know, they living in suburban neighborhoods and they're talking about getting wall slaps after Bigfoot hunting. You know what I mean? This is, if you want to believe this is a natural ape in the woods, I can understand why they don't want to talk about any of this stuff. Cause you know, gorillas don't do that.
No, and if they're sending things across time and space, you know, through an apportation process, if they're responsible for that moment, we're still outplayed by their capabilities. In fact, they're taking it easy on us. You know, we'll talk a little bit about Ron Moorhead here. He was really one of the first guys anyway to pull me aside, along with Tom Powell and another guy named Dave Rogers, that says, you know, this phenomena, it goes way deeper, and this depends on how deep you want to go. But this obsessive nature of the subject matter can pull you in into its world. And, you know, don't ever leave the human world for them, because that's the ultimate trick that they're trying to play, is pull you away from the human world and into their world where you don't belong. And I feel as though we absolutely don't belong with them. We belong aside them on their terms, but to actually live with them I don't believe it's an option. I mean, those that are lucky enough to have moments, fleeting moments with them, like Sarah Winnemucca, these stories about people taken away, but to actually live with them, I don't think that's an option. I think we are forced to live amongst them and beside them. You know, it changes everything. If you believe that, it changes your religion, it changes your spiritual faith, it changes science. Just this one little question about who and what they are really shifts everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, since you brought up Ron, let's explore that avenue. When did you meet Ron Moorhead?
I met Ron in 2010, and he showed up at a gathering that we had here in Eugene, Oregon. And he brought Scott Nelson along with him, and they talked about the Sierra sounds, and the convincing behind the samurai chatter was explained by not only Ron, but Scott Nelson's cryptozoological or cryptolinguist understanding of, you know, how language works and how to prove that Ron's sounds belong to the language of something non-human, but human-like. Have you ever had Scott on as a guest, or have you had a chance to talk to him?
I have, and I would love to. Just as a matter of introduction, just in case people don't know, Ron Moorhead was a part of a group of people who were recording what seems to be Sasquatch sounds, and it ended up being speech in the 1970s in a place in the remote Sierra Nevada mountains.
Yeah.
They made several tapes, several hours of tapes. I think they had like 40 hours of tapes or something, which has been distilled down to what they call the Sierra sounds. You can get it from, you know, Ron's website. I think it's ronmoorhead.com. You can hear samples all over the place. He's very good about giving podcast samples when he's a guest and going through the different sounds. And I have to say, I wanted to use some of the sounds on a music CD I'd done with my band. And I wrote Ron, and he gave me the coolest response I think possible. I said, would you care if I just use, you know, I just want to use like 20 seconds, just 20 seconds of these sounds. And Ron said, his reply was, I didn't make those sounds. Bigfoot made those sounds. Go ahead, use them. Which I thought was the coolest affirmative response like anyone could possibly give. I was completely blown away, and I already had respect for the man. But after that, I was like, all right, this guy, you know, I have respect, and he's a cool dude on top of that. And acknowledging at the same time that,
yeah, no, Ron, like,
you know, he didn't make those sounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, he's so giving with his time and with his research, and he never tells you you're wrong about anything. His go-to line is, well, you may be right, you know, no matter how crazy he may personally think the theory is. And it's an excellent line. You know, if you don't ever want to get an argument with, you know, someone about the paranormal, just say, well, you may be right. I mean, it really just lets it lie out there, and you don't have to argue about anything after that one. You just get clarity over agreement.
I've used it a few times.
He's really cool. He's an authentic adventurer, that dude.
He's lived a life that most of us could only hope to live. He's like, what a adventurous life he's had. Interesting.
Yeah, and they're paranormal stories. I mean, he'll tell you flat out that a lot of what happened up there is at the quantum level. That's why he wrote Quantum, you know, Bigfoot, is to try to make the scientists happy, you know, by talking about the paranormal through scientific terms and using the words the quantum level. But, you know, he had strange sounds follow him home. He definitely saw the lights up there on more than one occasion. You know, there's a family group of people surrounding their tent and their shelter wasn't a tent. It was more like logs pressed up against a giant old growth. If you haven't heard the Sierra sounds, sounds unbelievable. I mean, it sounds like samurai men up in the woods, you know, not just men, samurai women too, yelling at each other, very Japanese, very Euro-Asian sounding. There's a mixture of Squatchinese, we'll call it, or samurai chatter and human dialect. And the conversation between these elk hunters and these Bigfoot has never been reproduced on that level. So that's why we invited Ron to come down here in September and take part of something we're calling the Sierra Sasquatch Experience. And it's a couple different options for folks to hang out with Ron September 29th or 30th. The 29th is going to be a reserved thing for people who have a limited, intimate, I guess, camping experience with Ron. And we're going to do a recreation of the camp up in the mountains here with a life-size Bigfoot, which almost done making. And then they can stand with Ron amongst the old growth and get their photograph professionally taken, and then he'll autograph it the next day. But we're going to come back to this property where we're having active stuff happen and have a little barbecue into the evening time and enjoy each other's company. And then on the 30th, him and Scott Nelson are going to put on a show at the Axe and Fiddle in Cottage Grove. And that one, I think it's only $15 advance tickets to come to that show. It should be an all-day event. We'll have the statue there and vendors, and I think we can fit like 125 people in this two-story building. And if you hadn't had a chance to hear Scott and Ron talk together about this phenomena and the sounds, it's definitely worth checking out. So that's my sales plug with Ron. And I really want it to be something, you know, big and large and active for his sake, because, you know, it's harder and harder each year for Ron to get up in the Sierras. And I think he just got back actually not too long ago from doing a couple weeks up there.
Wow.
But anyway, I made a Bigfoot in honor of Ron. His name's Biggie. If you listen to the Sierra Sounds, you'll hear Ron refer to Biggie or talk to him in his lectures about Biggie. And so I went 7.5 feet up and about 3 feet wide with this guy and bent the last, oh man, I'm probably getting closer to like 55 or 60 of intense building and not quite done yet, but Biggie will be quite the piece and we'll take him out in the woods and give people their dream shot with a real life Bigfoot researcher.
How old's Ron now? He's getting up there, right?
I don't know how old Ron is. He hides it well.
Yeah.
He's definitely not running laps right now. Him and Bob Gimlin, you know, are up there in age, but man, they just, you'd never know it when you sit down and talk to them.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is this is true, like old guard Bigfoot folk, and it's a rare opportunity to get to have like what would be one-on-one time with Ron. It's an incredible opportunity. I wish I could be there. I have something to do that weekend, but I was seriously considering coming out for it because it sounds like an incredible event.
Oh, that would have been the ultimate. Yeah, I think we got like 8 tickets left. It's $200 to do this, and that's because it's a 2-day event. You know, the photographs have to be developed. The cameramen have to be hired. Building a Bigfoot isn't free. The venue is free for me, but in order to get the staff to run the place and cater it and rent a restroom out and pay the people that I'm living with for their time and effort and pay Ron, it came out to about $200 for 2 days, so $100 a day. So that one, it was limited to 15 because I knew it was going to be tougher to get people to sign up for that. And plus, you want a smaller group. If you have a limited time to be with somebody like Ronnie, a big crowd fighting for the next Bigfoot story. So, but the next one, the next day, you can come in general admission. It's $20 at the door, 15 advance. So not too bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And to hear Ron I didn't let you get into it too much because I had to stop and explain, you know, Ron's story a little bit in case anybody wasn't familiar with him. But Scott, right, is the other fellow. I'm sorry, I drew a blank.
Scott Nelson,
sorry, yes. He is a cryptolinguist. Yeah. He worked with the Navy. And, of course, he can explain it much better than I can. But what it boils down to is he recognized this as language, the recordings that Ron made. And his job in the Navy was not necessarily to decipher languages, but to determine, you know, if a real language was being spoken through various, they have various ways of doing it. It was his profession. He knows what he's doing. And the first time he heard these sounds, he recognized it as language, which is pretty incredible. And he's only, you know, dug in deeper since then.
Yeah, in fact, he used this term. You can hear this phrase, this utterance from Biggie, we'll call him. We don't know which Bigfoot made this phrase happen, but there's this known phrase, and the phrase goes food haivaya, food haivaya. So there's an English word, food, and there's this other mystery word, haivaya. Scott used this term, food haivaya, out in the woods to elicit. So that tells you the legitimacy of what's going on Ron's tapes. He wasn't a witness until he used.
You cut out a little bit. You cut out a little bit there. He used the phrase in the woods.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. He used
used this phrase, food haivaya. And Scott's really good at mimicking language as part of his discipline. He can speak, I think, fluent Russian. And he does really good at repeating the Sierra sounds. Anyway, so he elicited his first sighting by using this term out in the woods. One approached him. And I don't know if it was a daylight sighting or nighttime sighting, but as a previous, you know, I wouldn't call him a skeptic, but just a non-witness, he brought one in on him by using the Sierra sounds. I don't know anybody else who is. People do call blasting with Ron sounds. I don't know what kind of results they get, but there's something about the spoken word, very powerful, the spoken word. I mean, it talks about that throughout religions too. But I think they're into the real thing, that, you know, the mimicry stuff, they're just all clued in on your motives, man. I mean, if your motives are impure and you're out to trick them with call blasting, they're just going to put you in the douchey corner and treat you like that. And I just don't think it's the way to go. It'll slow your roll. If you want the real thing, give them the real thing. Be the real thing. Don't go out like a total nerd, you know, in camo and all your tech gear. I mean, it may look good on a selfie stick, and you may feel like you're fulfilling. I mean, I did it at first. Of course, you have all the cool gadgets and whatnot. And that, you know, the amount of times I've tried to put a FLIR up here on this property and nothing happens. Well, we only did that about four times before we gave up because, you know, they just knew. I mean, after the fourth time of nothing happening, and you, and as a tiny little FLIR, I mean, it's a super tiny little guy. There should be no way for them to see that at all, but they're tuned into your motives. And that's proven with the snake and the rabbit and the carnelian stone and the glass heart. I mean, the list goes on and on here for us, that they're tuned into your motives.
Yeah, and I get asked a number of times, like those lights I was talking about, well, why didn't you film them? Why didn't you take pictures? Well, we took a couple still pictures, and they're completely unremarkable. You know, to be there and see them and to see them reacting, and then to see a couple of, you know, what appears to be pin lights in the blackness on photograph is nothing. But even if we could photograph them, I think at the point, they are very reactive, and they do not like, and the phenomenon across the board doesn't like photographs, that being photographed. This was proven at Skinwalker. Again, if we want to check back on that.
Yeah.
The camera cords that were being cut there, you know, the phenomenon in general, and don't ask me why, it doesn't like being photographed. So I think one of the surest ways to stop it is to start putting up cameras and stuff, you know. It doesn't like it.
Yeah. They don't mind audio. I mean, right, you got the full permission slip to listen to them. Listening is, I mean, I've heard them come up and tap on the recorder. You can hear them breathing. We think we even caught one farting. They don't mind at all being recorded. Exactly. We got one laughing, actually. It's one of our best recordings, is
wow,
walking up and laughing like Scooby-Doo.
Wow.
It's a really cool recording. But yeah, the permission slip to film them, I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe they feel like it's, you know, taking part of your soul or something. There is this real permission slip that has not been granted with videotaping our photographs, and it's just a waste of time. I mean,
yep,
if you're in this to prove it to your buddies, you're going to be beating your head against the wall for years. And I get that. I mean, I have this urge constantly to fight against ego and try to prove this to anybody else other than myself. But, you know, I think that it's okay to keep like a little family album of cool things that have happened, like the knee prints and all the little crazy stuff in the Ziploc bag here that they've left. But when you have, you know, a snake and a rabbit left at your front feet, and there's no reason for those things to die on their own, it just changes the way you think about this phenomena. So they've asked me to change the way I think about it. That puts me in a whole different camp of researcher. It's not the popular club.
It is not.
You know, no, you don't get invited to any of the little functions and whatnot that you used to get invited to. And I'm totally okay with that now, because it's the more honest way to go. And it's way more fun. I mean, the kind of stuff that's happening now is way more fun. It's really just kind of like, you know, when the waves are pulling you out, they say relax and don't fight the waves so much, otherwise you'll drown. That relaxing against the current has really helped out quite a bit. So I'm at peace. You know, I can leave this property now in September and go back to my other house about an hour away, and I can relax about it. I have answers. They're not all the answers I wanted. I didn't get to see one. I still have some time here yet, though, to see if they come right up to the workshop here and maybe shake the hands of this replica in the garage, but I doubt any of that will happen here. I think I'm happy with the way things have gone and can leave with a peaceful heart. I should probably mention here too, before, because I know you probably have to go and so do I, that if people are interested in getting a hold of Ron's event with Strange Brow, that's the company I run, I guess if you can call it a company, it's more of a hobby. Strange Brow is just like it sounds, but it's B-R-A-U, kind of the German iteration. They can go to strangebrow.com or they can go to Strange Brow Sasquatch. brownpaperkick.com and get the tickets directly for the event here in Cottage Grove for the 30th. But if they want to get the tickets for the Sierra Sasquatch thing, they'll have to go to my website at strangebrow.com and go to look for the Ron Moorhead icon at the top there. And there's a way to get a ticket yourself.
Send me all those links. I'll put them up in the show notes too, so people can just click on them.
Okay.
All right.
And I got cut off. Cool, man.
That's fine. Well, thanks so much. Fantastic story.
Yeah.
I love this stuff. And please keep us updated on anything else that happens.
Sounds good. Thank you.
If you'd like to help us continue making Strange Familiars, think about becoming a patron at Patreon. That's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. You can check out all the different levels of support there, but at just $3 a month, you can get full extra shows. This month, I think we're doing 2 extra shows. Most months, we do at least 1. So it's a great place to support Strange Familiars and get more Strange Familiars at the same time. That's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Thanks for listening, everybody. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Music, books, art, podcasts, and more. DarkHollerArts.com. If you're on Facebook, check out our group, the Strange Familiars Gathering. Just look up Strange Familiars Gathering. You can join and share in the fun. We share news articles and news about the show and all kinds of stuff on there. So, Strange Familiars Gathering on Facebook. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. For more, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com.
Unseen things. hidden in the haunted ground, guarded by unseen things. What was lost is now found.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.